This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. As the Neutrino USEA American Eventing Championships presented by VTO Saddlery get underway this week in the Texas Rose Horse Park in Tyler, Texas, we hear from Rob Burke, the Chief Operating Officer at the USEA, about the plans for this year's event. And later on in the program, as part of our series on this year's USEA Hall of Fame inductees, Gina Miles reflects on McKinley's outstanding career. But first, we hear from Rob Burke. Just a couple of days to the start of this year's AECs. Much excitement there, I'm sure, with your team as you've put the final touches to the competition.
Yeah, Chris. Every year it's exciting, but I have to say this is probably one of the most exciting years we've had in a long time. There's just so much going on that we're all gonna have as much fun as possible during the event, but I know we're all going to breathe a nice sigh of relaxation once it's over with as well.
Well, the eventers do have a reputation of knowing how to party, don't they?
They do, and we're trying to make sure that we whet that appetite as best as possible during the AC.
And you're going to do it Texas style.
We are. Yeah, we not only with the musicians we're bringing into the parties, we have country rock musicians, bands, solo artists coming in for the parties, and we have our Texas themed beer garden, and yeah, really everything during the AEC at Texas, from the boots on to the mechanical bull, it's got a Texas theme to it.
Well, we know a lot of people will be listening as they're driving down there to Texas, some of them on a very long road trip, so they'll be dying to hear what you have to say about what they can expect when they drive into the Texas Rose Horse Park.
Sure. So a lot of our competitors will be coming in on Tuesday or on Wednesday, and as long as they're all packed up and their horses are taken care of on Wednesday, then on Wednesday evening everybody should come out and join us in the trade fair and the main arena for the large welcome party and kind of opening ceremonies. We've got some exciting things going on, so some new things this year. I think this will probably be a first for the AEC, hopefully not a last. We're going to have a Renaissance Fair troop come in, and we're going to have a live joust at the beginning of the competition, believe that or not. And that'll take place at 6 p.m. at the, right there by the main trade fair. And that's brought to us by the Knights of the Four Winds. They're from a Renaissance Fair that's in Troop, Texas, nearby. And then once the party gets kicked off, we've got a solo artist, Colin Boyd's coming in. And Colin Boyd has a number of credits to his songwriting credits to his record, including songs for Carrie Underwood and others. So he'll be rocking the night away. And we've got food, once again, by Fat Apple Catering. And it really, we're going to have a lot of fun that first night.
We should point out that no event horses will be involved or expected to participate in the jousting, correct?
No, correct. You know, I thought from a historical perspective, it was pretty good. It was a pretty good connection, though, to bring in some old style military with kind of our modern take on what became the military competition. So from there, we've got tons. That's Wednesday, and we'll be rocking the night out Wednesday night. Hopefully some of our competitors will save some energy since the competition starts the next day. But we've got, starting first thing on Wednesday as well, we've got the pro course walks going on. Thanks to our friends over at Pro, they're bringing in a lot of the top pros in the sport to walk from the beginner novice through the preliminary course with anybody who wants to come with them. And, you know, in the past, we've had some of the biggest names in the sport, from Buck Davidson to Laney Ashker to others, go around and tell you how to approach the fence, what they're thinking. And it's really, you can't beat that opportunity, whether you're a rider or not. Having those pros tell you how they would take the course is invaluable. And then on Thursday, the actual competition gets underway. Our trade fair opens that first thing in the morning, and I have to say this is probably our largest trade fair we've ever had, and we've got a ton of new vendors coming in. The beer garden will get up and running at noon, and then We've got, throughout the day, we've got the Event College with some of our pros talking about how they're going to be approaching dressage and what they're going to be thinking pre and post cross-country. I know that Tammy Smith and Kathy Wieschoff have both agreed to be with us on Thursday. And then we're ending Thursday with a big pizza party for all the young riders who want to come on out. And we might throw in a surprise or two that might not be on the schedule, but if people look around, they'll find it.
Does it involve a mechanical bull?
Well, that's going to come in on Saturday. So, and that will, you know, that team riding bull tournament is, it's almost infamous from last year. I actually know a couple of pro riders who've said this year that they're not going to do it this year, and others who said they're absolutely going to do it this year. I think Ellen Daddy Hume, among others, said she probably won't, because I think it took her a little bit of a time to recover after her ride on the mechanical bull last year. But it is safe. We've got a nice inflatable mattress for you to land on. But if your team, if you're a member of a three-person team that competes in the bull riding tournament and you win, we've got some big, fancy, authentic Texas belt buckles with the AAC logos on them for the winners. So that, again, that's coming on Saturday night.
Just to be clear, no USEA points are awarded and added to your rankings for the mechanical bull ride, right?
I don't know. I mean, you know, if they're really good, that might be worth some consideration. Someone might have to submit an official request for that. But, you know, I would have to say, some of us think we will be able to do it really well, given our history with maybe some rambunctious horses, but it's not as easy as it looks, and the guys who are operating that mechanical bull, I think they know how to get someone off pretty easily if they really feel like it. So I'd say be nice to the mechanical bull operators. That's my best tip.
That's right, yes. You know, the odd dollar or a drink, you know, anything just to bribe them, right? And
I think so. But before that Saturday night bull riding, we've got on Friday, you know, Chris, every night we've got something happening. So on Friday, we've got the dog show, which is going to be presented this year by Nature Select of the Arklatex. And it's probably, I know for our CEO, Joe Whitehouse, it's probably her favorite part of the whole event. And we've got a number of divisions, and anybody can come and enter their dog in the competition. We've got some great prizes from our sponsors, and then that actually gets that evening wraps up with another party. The adult rider social and adult team challenge party is that evening. Thanks to the Area 5 adult riders and many of the other adult rider programs, they have a catered meal and it's great. Everybody's welcome to come out. And all that is after a full day of competition, and on top of that, more Event College opportunities, such as, you know, on cross country during the Attaquan finals, the cross country round, you can actually go out to the water complex, and Captain Mark Phillips will be out there talking to everybody there about the design of the cross country course, what they were thinking when they put it together, and kind of what he sees while people are approaching the course, and then I know Kathy Wieschoff will also be out there earlier talking about how to approach the cross country. So so that day's jam packed, and then again after the bull riding tournament, we've got on Saturday we've got that competitors party, which has now become pretty legendary. And we've got a band, a country rock band coming in. Luke Robinson Band is coming into play. So, you know, it's just, I know I'm going to be worn out on Saturday evening, Chris, and hopefully everybody else is pretty happy at the end.
I'm sure they will be, but I heard a rumor that there was some kind of surprise challenge to any 2015 Hall of Fame inductees who were attending, and I can think of two who will for sure be attending the AECs.
Yeah, you know, I know that both Mike and Joe, Mike Huber and Joe Whitehouse, might need to. Maybe we'll have a write-off in the mechanical bolter.
I think that is one possibility, of course, is the write-off, but also some expectation at the competitors' party. I think that there should definitely be another spin to it, given this would be Joe's last AECs, and Mike Huber, both of them being inducted into the Hall of Fame.
I think so. I should say that Mike is going to be nice enough that evening to, during the advanced finals on Saturday evening, Mike's going to talk. He'll, again, with the event college, come and speak with the group in and around the show jumping arena. He'll come and talk to them about the course and what he sees. So maybe we'll be a little nice to Mike that evening and see. Maybe we'll give him a little bit of a leg up, because, you know, Joe, we're pretty happy for Joe and her impending retirement. So we might be nice to Mike, but I'm not going to say we aren't going to tip the scales in Joe's favor in whatever competition.
I have to wonder. I mean, there should be. I mean, typically there's a, you know, I mean, look, there's traditions in every sport, isn't there? There has to be something that the event you do that is memorable, and that photographs can be taken of to be used during the induction ceremony at the convention.
You've got it, Chris. You really do.
And Joe and Mike will thank me for this idea, I'm sure.
Absolutely, I'm sure. Yeah.
but much fun will be had by all as they head to the horse park this week. And competition begins when, Rob?
The competition, the actual competition starts at, I believe it's around 8. It's between 8 and 9 a.m. on Thursday morning. So, people will be invited to come on out and see as much as they can, and not only for the parties, but for the excellent riding and the, it really is a festival, as you know, Chris, and we try to make sure that it's memorable for both spectator and rider alike. And, you know, if for those moms and dads or husbands or daughters who are coming along to the competition with their favorite competitor, we also encourage them to consider volunteering and giving a little bit of your time to the competition, because it makes it run better for all of our competitors. So, you know, we can't wait.
Lots of ways to get excited and involved about the AECs. And the weather, well, being Texas, no doubt hot, but very, very hot, or what are you expecting there this week, Rob?
So the early weather reports are saying that it'll be in the upper 80s, so it's going to be hot, but, you know, luckily we all like to say, whether it's true or not, we always say it's a dry heat, so it's not so bad.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm sure much fun will be had by everybody at this year's AECs. And thank you for coming on the program. Have a fabulous week, Rob. And we'll circle back around afterwards and hear about it all here on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris.
And a reminder that you can find more information about the Neutrina USEA American Eventing Championships presented by VTO Saddlery on the website at useventing.com. And now, as we continue our series on the 2015 USEA Hall of Fame inductees, Gina Miles reflects on the successful partnership that she had with McKinley. Gina, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
He has to be one of those lifetime best friends, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, definitely a horse of a lifetime, or sometimes people aren't even fortunate to have a horse like that come into their lives. So, just an amazing animal that was loved by many, has many fans and many friends all over the world.
Well, I think it was his stature as much as anything that caught people's attention, didn't it? I mean, when you first saw him, what were your first impressions of him?
It was Tom Schultz and Laura Coates, his owners, that spotted him, and very much it was his presence. They were in Ireland at Punchestown, the Young Event Horse Competition. They were just getting ready to leave, and they saw this horse cantering across, just finishing up his round, and they just had to find out who this horse was, and they, you know, Mark Todd was riding him, and went up and spoke to him and introduced themselves, but it was very much his stature, his presence. He just oozed that sort of charisma that just was recognizable from a mile away.
And in terms of his rideability at that time, because everyone knows he was a big horse, and you know, you would, you know, maybe not as tall as you would probably like to have been when you were riding him. So how was his rideability, and how did you kind of feel that first partnership was developing to, you know, to counteract your difference in sizes?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, when he arrived, I mean, the conversation took place between Tom and Laura and myself about importing this horse from Ireland for me to ride. And when he arrived and I looked at him and stood next to him, I mean, I definitely said, there's no way, this horse is way too big for me, was my initial impression. And but he was very kind. You know, he was a very good horse. He wasn't, he loved working. He loved having a partnership with the rider. He wasn't ever working against the rider. Although, when I did go first to get on him the first time, you would put one foot in the stirrup and he would bolt. So at 17'2" and my size, that was sort of a problem. And we did call Chris Ryan over in Ireland to find out, you know, well, you know, did you have problems? How'd you get on this horse? And, you know, Chris Ryan, who's 6'4", said, oh, well, I just vaulted on, you know, like the Irish do. So that obviously wasn't going to work for me. But we did have a little bit of an issue sorting out the mounting problem. But then once that got going, you know, he to jump, to go cross country and to jump, he was always very polite. I was able to take him all the way through the 4-star level in a snaffle. The dressage was hard, though. You know, he was a big horse, and that level of dressage was new to me, and I did need quite a lot of help from people taller than me, you know, to help really teach him about dressage and balance and collection. So Sandy Phillips rode him a lot for me. Hubertus Schmidt in Germany rode him a lot for me. I did have a lot of help from taller, stronger legged people myself.
At what point then, Gina, when you were starting with him, did you think, this is a horse that's going to take me all the way to 4-star and onto the team again?
Well, apparently right from the beginning. I mean, I don't have a memory of it, but my mother remembers probably about a month after he came. He was only 5 years old, and Mark Todd was teaching a clinic at Wild Horse, and this horse had just arrived. I put him in the trailer. I took him to this clinic. I'm jumping around, and we're having a dinner, you know, after the clinic, and apparently I said to Mark Todd that I was going to ride this horse in the Olympics. And he looked at me and he said, oh, okay, well, you know, obviously the horse had never been advanced. And he said, well, have you ever ridden advanced? And I said, well, no. And, and he did give me a little bit of a quizzical look about my statement. But, you know, apparently I was sure from the very beginning that that's what was going to happen.
Well, what was it about his performance with you then, and the way you were forming that partnership, that gave you the confidence and to continue with him despite the challenges of his size and his other difficulties in those early days?
Well, maybe just youthful, blind confidence. You know, I mean, he was very successful. You know, when we started out competing, he won you know, every competition pretty much that he went in for a long time at the lower, you know, as he was moving up through the levels. He never had a cross country jumping penalty. You know, he was having a lot of success. So obviously that bolstered our confidence along the way. And he jumped around his first 4-star at Rolex and the pouring rain. And I mean, he certainly gave us lots of indicators that he would just keep progressing up the levels. But there were certainly lots of setbacks along the way, too. I mean, both with physical, you know, health issues, physical issues, setbacks like that. But I was never deterred. I just, you know, every little setback, I was just a little detour off the road. But I had confidence that we would get there. Like I said, perhaps maybe it was a little bit of a, you know, youthful optimism. But
Some bravado there. Yeah. But what do you think was so special about him then, in terms of his temperament and his performance and his ability to compete at that level, that made him special, made him that horse of a lifetime for you?
Well, for sure, his huge amount of scope. I mean, he just was born he was born to do four stars. I mean, he made a four star look like a training level course. I mean, we always would joke that, you know, he needed a five star. He had a huge stride, you know, ability to jump an enormous fence. But I think because of his size, he also had a quietness about him that allowed him to sort through the problems without making them too complicated. You know, he didn't get worried or frantic, or any new question he saw in cross country, he would size it up in a very calm manner and not get worried about it. You know, so he just was a genius cross country. He, you know, Brian Sabo would set up the most complicated exercises he could think of and, you know, spend 10 minutes creating this complicated question, and McKinley just would size it up and just go straight through it the first time perfectly. You know, and that's just the way he was. He was born to go cross country. It was in his nature.
Well, of course, he had so many highlights in his career, but when you look back in the rearview mirror now at those achievements, what were the standout moments for you of all of those accomplishments with him, Gina?
I'd say, sort of the top three, I would say probably would be the first time he jumped around Rolex, that was that year of the horrible pouring rain, where, if you remember, Little Tricky in the very end of it, you know, had a masterful go in the mud, and McKinley wasn't much before that. And his first four star, my first four star, 8 years old, and the way he just clocked through that mud. I mean, that was definitely where he really showed his class, his really true class. So that's definitely a standout moment. When he did the World Cup final in Po, also 2003, that was the first year of the World Cup final. Had never been to that, you know, sort of out there in Europe on my own that year. I was doing dressage over there, training with Hubertus and Sandy. And the way that he came in, I mean, he had an okay dressage, maybe, you know, 10th place after dressage or something, but the way he ate at the cross country, and that was back when the World Cup show jumping was big, you know, they were setting it really big, and the way he came in and showed, that's when he really knew the difference between the different sports. Because when he first moved up to intermediate advanced, he would have some rails here and there, but that performance of that World Cup, he really showed he understood the different phases. We understood the difference between cross country and clearing the show jumps. And then obviously his performance at the Olympic Games, where he had personal best performances on all three days.
Would it be an obvious question then that would have been perhaps the career highlight in your partnership with him at the Olympics?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, and my only, you know, is I wouldn't call it a regret, but, you know, he came to me, you know, really young in my career, my first advanced horse, my first three-star, my first four-star horse. And, you know, I had to learn so much along the way. And, you know, there at the Olympic Games, sort of having really learned the sport, having learned how to ride fast cross country and understanding the dressage and all the pieces of the puzzle. And then, you know, it not happening sort of until later in his career that, you know, maybe if he'd come to me later in my career, I could have helped him, you know, earn more medals and more ribbons and more accolades and more credits to his record. But as we were sort of both, you know, learning at the same time, you know, he doesn't have maybe as many wins on his career as he would have in another circumstance. But
well, of course, at convention, he will be celebrated and there'll be lots of magic moments to share. And it'll be a nostalgic time for you, Gina. But are there any little moments that you'd like to share with us now about him and your partnership and maybe some experiences on the team that you haven't told anybody yet so you can share with us?
Well, you know, I'll always remember, again, sort of back at that that World Cup final in France, you know, one of the best times I can remember with him is, you know, before the jog on the last day, and we're exercising the horses, loosening them up before the jog, and, you know, cantering around in France in this on this incredible animal, and just thinking how lucky I am just to even have, just to be able to ride this horse, just cantering around on this horse, you know, no pressure, no whatever, just enjoying sort of a moment with that, with this horse. So that was, I do this as sort of a crystal clear moment of like, this is why we actually do this. You know, I mean, it's obviously we're competitive people and we like to win and we like to win medals and stuff like that. But those moments that you share, quiet moments with a horse, you know, I really remember that. And he was a funny horse. He didn't really like, strangers. You know, he wasn't really friendly to anybody that would come up to his stall. I mean, he didn't know. He would turn and he would go and he would hide, you know, in the back of his stall. But once he knew his people, who his people were, he was a very sensitive, caring horse, but only if you made it sort of into his inner circle. So, you know, those of us that spent a lot of time with him and, you know, got to have those, a lot of those moments with him where he was a little bit shy and a little bit, I wouldn't say he was standoffish. He just was a little bit shy. He didn't, you know, just come and get into everybody's lap. But he did like his people and would spend time with his people that he knew.
So he had a very exclusive club then?
Yes, he did. Yes, he was a little selective.
Sounds like it.
It wasn't from an arrogance, you know. It wasn't a cocky arrogant. He really just was a little bit reserved and shy and sort of in his own self. So it took a little while to get him to come out of his shell.
So if you could sum him up in one sentence, what would it be, Gina?
Oh, my goodness. One sentence. I don't even know how to sum it up in one sentence. You know, I mean, he just was such a talented, but I guess humble in a way. You know, he wasn't cocky and arrogant. He was a talented, humble, confident, you know, horse. I mean, we like to think of them as people, right? So if he was a person, you know, he'd be that big, confident, quiet, quiet guy standing in the corner that once you got to know him and started talking to him, you'd find out how interesting and special and talented he was.
And life for McKinley is now when he's in his 20s, and how does he spend his days?
Well, he is retired. He lives at a friend of Tom and Laura, his owner's place in Templeton, so close by where they live. So they're able to enjoy him and spend time with them all the years that he, you know, was traveling with me, that they didn't, you know, get a chance to visit with him and see him every day and spend time with him. They're getting to enjoy him now in his later years and enjoy him in his nice, quiet retirement.
Well, obviously a wonderful partnership and great memories that you'll, I'm sure, cherish forever, Gina, especially when he's celebrated by everyone at the convention later this year. So thank you for coming on the program and sharing your memories.
Oh, you're very welcome.
For information and to register for this year's convention, please go to the website at useventing.com, where you can catch up with all the latest news, as you can on our social media via Facebook and Twitter. This podcast can be downloaded from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. On next week's program, we'll be reviewing this year's Neutrina USEA American Eventing Championships presented by VTO Saddlery as we hear from some of the riders. Until then, thank you all for listening wherever you are in the world and enjoy your eventing.